This is the BC Resource Group's Path to Partner podcast, where we get exclusive insights from the leading figures in legal. And now, here's your host, Colin Moses.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Path to Partner podcast, where we are talking to some of the leading lights in legal to find out the secrets to their success. Now, today we are very fortunate to have with us Mr. Seth Taub. Now, Seth is the firm-wide chair of the Securities and Shareholder Litigation Practice Group at Baker Botts. In addition to his extensive legal experience, Seth has also been featured on Bloomberg Politics, Fortune Online, the Anti-Corruption Report, New York Law Journal, and Law 360, among a host of others. He has also been listed in the Best Lawyers in America, recognized as a New York Super Lawyer, and named a Client Service All-Star in BTI's 2012 Client Service Survey. So, Seth, thank you so much for joining us today.
Nice to be here. Thanks very much, Colin.
Awesome. Now, let me just start off with getting a little bit of background about you, your practice, and your firm.
Very good. So I am a trial lawyer by profession. I began my career with the Securities and Exchange Commission in their enforcement division, became a branch chief of enforcement in New York, did some time as an assistant U.S. attorney assigned over to the Southern District of New York U.S. Attorney's Office. And this was all for either securities or other forms of white collar matters. After that, I went into private practice. I worked for a few years as the general counsel of an investment bank. And now for the last 30 plus years, I've been a trial lawyer and defense lawyer in private practice and law firm.
Awesome. So what made you jump over to the private side? Was it just wanted to make more money, or was there another incentive behind that?
I actually think that working both sides of the aisle, to use a political metaphor, is a value add for clients and for your own experience.
Definitely.
Obviously, you can market yourself if you're going to do government defense work on having been in the government, and particularly a couple of different departments within the government. But at the end of the day, your context of how you see the practice of law, both representing the government in its interest and private parties and their interests, I think develops you as a better advocate and more effective in dealing with the legal issues from either direction. I think I'm better for having worked on both for the government and the private side.
Most definitely, because you know the secrets of the other side, so it makes you more efficient.
Well, you understand the mindset more than the secrets, but yes, I agree with you.
Right. So stepping back a little bit, what made you want to become a lawyer in the first place?
Well, like most young people, you see adults that you look up to. My father, who was in the shoe business of all things, had a friend who was a lawyer, and I always thought he was an interesting person. But the truth is, I hadn't made my mind until my senior year of college, okay. And I went to City College, very humble beginnings. And I saw an ad in the New York Times about a new law school opening, Cardozo Law School in New York. So I cut out the ad, I sent away for an application, and got in. So I went to law school, and I loved it. The intellectual challenge, the concept of challenging authority appealed to me. We grow up as children learning there are all these rules you have to follow, right. And it is liberating as a lawyer to say you're allowed to challenge those things, and here's how you do it.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, speaking of law school, a lot of the candidates that we speak to believe that law school doesn't really adequately prepare you for what it's like to be a lawyer, particularly in New York. I was wondering what you feel about that. Do you feel that law school does prepare them or doesn't prepare them? And how do you think they can possibly do a better job?
Well, the answer is it does prepare you. I disagree for one aspect of the law. Half of what you do as a lawyer is scholarship and being an effective advocate. And you clearly learn that in law school if you're going to be a trial lawyer.
Right.
corporate lawyers are not prepared to be corporate lawyers out of law school. The law schools are slowly changing. But on the advocacy side, you learn to be a scholar in the law, an advocate in the law. And so I disagree. You do need that training. What law schools do not teach you, and they are now learning to include this as well, is how to develop business, how to work with business. There are two aspects to being a lawyer. It's knowing the law, being a good advocate, and also being able to deal with clients, to give them a sense that you know how to solve their problems, they should trust you, and they should follow your advice. And that's a skill that law schools have not but need to teach.
Right. Right. Yeah, because that was pretty much the feedback that we've been getting is that, you know, oh, okay, we learned the law and we learned the practice, but there was nothing about, you know, billable hours. There was nothing about developing business, as you just mentioned. And they felt that these were things that should have been at least touched upon while in law school, as opposed to, you know, you learn the law, then just thrown out into the legal world and kind of learn that part of the job as you go along.
It used to be you could get away without that because the runway for a lawyer to be responsible for developing relationships and handling clients used to be 5 years, 7 years, 12 years. Now, if within 2 or 3 years, the law firm doesn't see in you the ability to work with clients and develop business, you're already put in a pigeonhole. Oh, he could do the legal work, but he's not partner material.
Right.
So the ability to interact with people, the so-called soft skills, the ability to generate trust in clients, that's the magic that differentiates the great legal scholar from the successful legal practitioner.
Right, right. So how would you advise your associates to develop business? Like, do you have any tips or any advice on along those lines?
Well, it's nothing new to say that business comes from relationships much more than legal skill.
Right.
And so you need to break out of your concept of the line between work and personal relationships. You need to have a part of your personal relationships as possible future business relationships, not all, obviously, but some portion of your development of personal relationships have to be with people in the business world. If you want to be a business lawyer, or if you want to be an immigration lawyer, you need to deal with ethnic communities that have immigrants coming in. Those are just two examples of how, as an associate, from second or third year on, you need to be out there joining business organizations or charitable organizations or ethnic organizations where you'll interact with a demographic that hires lawyers of the type you want to practice.
Awesome. Now, dialing back a bit, do you remember how you got your first client and or who it was?
So like most partners who got out of law school at the end of the 70s and early 80s, I developed client relationships through the partners I worked for at the law firm. And those eventually, when I became a partner, sent me my new work. So I did not follow the plan I just advocated.
Right.
And that worked back then.
Yeah.
That will not work today. Clients are not handed over as much as they used to be. Partners tend to stay longer at their law firms. Compensation schemes are based on the business you bring in, so they share the relationships less. This is just the nature of the economic motives driving partner behavior. So that being the case, you need to develop your own business, and that's why you need to get out there into the business world, the charitable world, and develop relationships yourself.
Awesome. Now, you just mentioned that your start came from partners and that cannot really happen anymore. Now, what were your early years in legal like, and how else has the legal world changed since then?
So early on, when I started at a law firm, I traded certainly on my government experience to attract work from within the firm to defend government investigations and eventually graduated to commercial disputes. Because fundamentally, the advantage of being a prosecutor is you try cases to verdict. And that continues to be, 40 years later, a differentiator. people who prosecute for a few years have much more trial experience than folks who don't, as a general matter, unless you work for an insurance company and you do accident cases or a different unique area where we're actually trying cases. Becoming a true trial lawyer, if you're going to be in litigation, is the first differentiator. And that's what I garnered from being a prosecutor. And that was my ticket to succeed. Today, people come out of the prosecutor's office and simply getting defense work from other partners is not enough. You've got to develop your own work. And that, it seems to me, is the differentiator. I was able to leverage my days as a prosecutor into success, but my real differentiator came maybe 5 or 8 years after I became a partner when I started developing my own practice. And that, of course, has always been true. And that's when I learned to develop relationships with people. And that's key in your success in private practice.
Right. Now, was building your own practice always something that was important to you?
Well, yes. If you choose to go the law firm path, you're choosing to say, I want to spend half my time in sales and half my time practicing law.
Right.
Otherwise, you go in-house if you just want to practice law, or you go to the government if you want to try cases. But no one should enter law firm life thinking, I just want to practice law. I'll let somebody else deal with the clients or go get in business. Those are not the business models of law firms. You will not be successful just by saying, I'm a really good lawyer. Everybody will call me. That happens, but that is rarely the path to success.
So would you say that the tricks to building your own practice is pretty much just relationships and making as many of them as you can, trading on them, and being as outgoing and out there as possible?
Well, success in a law firm has two pieces. And I'm putting aside for the moment legal capability. Normally, you don't get admitted to being an associate in a law firm or promoted to partner if you don't have good legal skills. So obviously, you need good legal skills. But beyond that, success in a law firm is bringing in business. And if you bring in enough, then maybe nobody will care whether you're a nice person or not. But the second critical element to success in a law firm is how to deal with your partners. Like any hierarchical association, law firms are political animals. And you need to develop a skill of working with the corporate lawyers if you're a litigator, or the litigators if you're a corporate lawyer, the IP lawyers who talk science that you'll never understand, or the real estate lawyers. Your relationship with your partners is just below your relationship with your clients, the next most important thing in success in a law firm. You need to treat them as your partners, as essentially your substitute spouse in terms of interrelationships. You need to trust them. You need to send them work. Right. If they ask you to help on their matters, you jump on it as if it's your own. Then you develop a reputation of a go-to person so that people will help you and you will help other people. And that builds a circle of goodwill within the law firm where they say, we need this person. We need to make sure we give them the best assignments. We pay them decently, etc. So it's not all building business. It's all how to work within an organization. And my final point there is I know many partners who bring in lots of business but go from firm to firm because they can't play well with others. You spend as much time in the office as a lawyer as you do with your spouse. So you need to develop a relationship with your partners that you would in terms of trust as you will with your friends and your wife or husband.
Right. Definitely. Definitely. Sometimes you spend more time than you do it with the spouse or with the family. So yeah, great advice. Great advice.
Unfortunately, yes, that's sometimes true. Although obviously it's always important to spend time, carve out personal time, because that also leads to unhappiness, which reinforces the point, just as at home as in the office, you need to have trust and a solid relationship with the people around you. What people forget is that's true in an office too.
Definitely. Now, speaking of carving out time, how do you deal now and how have you dealt before? Because I know it's changed with the work-life balance challenge. And did you have time for outside interests when you were first beginning at a law firm? And how has it changed now?
That's actually an interesting question. So there's no question that your husband or wife needs to understand that a good piece of your life is dedicated to the practice of law. And that's got to be a discussion going into the relationship.
Of course.
And it is different in some fields than others. Professional services, accounting, legal, you spend a lot of time at work, and the spouse needs to understand that. But more importantly, you could also decide where and how you're going to work. So what I did is I worked for my first 19 years in private practice at a New Jersey law firm 20 minutes from my house. So I was able to get home for soccer games, be there for my kids' important life events, because I could go there and go back to work if I needed to.
Right.
When 19 years into it, when the kids were entering into college, I moved from New Jersey to New York, where I could slightly increase my compensation, get a little more exposure to international clients. And at that point, my kids were both less interested in seeing me, although I still see plenty. I see them plenty, and we have great relationships.
Right.
But, and now, you know, so I actually made a decision to physically locate near my home in order to make that balance easier. And obviously, another option would be if you work in New York or Chicago or a big city, is you move your family into the city.
Right.
Because proximity is critical in that balance.
Definitely, definitely. Now, was having access to international clients, as you just mentioned, was that something that was important to you?
It was, and for reasons having to do with the direction of legal work. With the rise of the BRICS countries, thanks to the 1994 Uruguay round of the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades, Russia, China, Brazil, India, South Africa, the BRICS countries, and other places in the world exploded. And I had long believed that there are hundreds of thousands of lawyers in the United States, but far, far fewer quality lawyers in these developing countries. So I viewed that as a more open market. And so my decision to go to an international law firm was partially designed to capture a market where I had less competition. You know, there are tens of thousands of lawyers as I look out my window and look at the Empire State Building as we speak. But when I speak to clients in Moscow or Shenzhen or Mumbai, there are other lawyers around, but not tens of thousands, maybe hundreds. That's much better odds in my book.
Definitely. So considering your practice, has there been any large impacts from things that have gone on in general society, like environmental things like the election, new laws coming in and things like that?
So certainly every new administration in America, every new position the European Union takes in Brussels is an opportunity for lawyers, right? Just like in the stock market, if things are more or less even, people figure out what to do and it's hard to make money. Volatility in law. Volatility in governments is a thing of beauty for the legal profession because it gives rise to more advice work and it gives rise to more disputes because people don't understand the new rules. So looking at it globally is, I like change. Change is good for lawyers.
Yeah.
You know, people love or hate a current administration. People think Brexit is a stupid idea or a great idea. But whatever these things are, they're good for lawyers.
Right.
Now, it's true that the current administration, there has been a drop off in prosecutions. So there's a little less work on the defense side. But on the other side, the international trade piece has never been busier. As it happens, I currently teach international trade at my old law school. And so I thought it would be a boring class. It's turned out to be pretty interesting.
Awesome.
So the answer there is change is what's important. It doesn't, you don't have to make decisions, this president or that prime minister or the current person who runs competition in Brussels is good or bad. I'm agnostic. What I like is change because change brings uncertainty and legal work. Obviously, I have moral views, but from a business standpoint, I just want change.
Definitely. Now, was your practice impacted by the scandals that happened, you know, when, you know, the whole Madoff thing and the subsequent scandals after that?
So every few years, there's some new corporate scandal. I remember I was just out of the government at my first law firm of the two I've been at my whole life. and the Drexel Burnham scandal broke. And I represented a senior person at Drexel Burnham. And then there were all kinds of new legislation that followed the scandal. And then a few years later, there was a savings and loan scandal or a repo scandal for repurchase agreements. And then there was Madoff and some baby Madoffs. Or in the 90s, there were many brokerage firms that had issues in Long Island, New York. And I got work out of that. So just as change is good, the occasional big scandal is good for a white-collar lawyer, because there are all these reverberations through industry. So yes, Madoff was good for lawyers, good for legislation. There was some new legislation, so we had to teach clients how to obey it. And, you know, my guiding light has always been, look, we're all very lucky to be in a business like the law, where you have a little piece of history that you're affecting. You could change clients' lives for the better. And I have this moral compass. This is what ethically I can and can't do. And if I can turn a guy or a gal who makes a judgment error and is facing a destruction of their life, and I can save them from that, that's a good day's work, right?
Definitely.
Fundamentally, ministers try to save lives. Lawyers like to save lives. Doctors like to save lives. That's why fundamentally you get pleasure from your work. And if I can save some people's lives, if I can passionately change them for the better and get them out of a mess, that's a reason to come in every morning. And as long as you have a passion like that, and you combine that with good business sense and good politics sense in the law firm, you will be successful.
Awesome. Yeah, no, totally agree. Now, going back to your career now, what do you think helped you most on your path to partner? And is there anything that you might have done differently that you think would have affected your career for the better?
Well, certainly you need some mentors within the law firm or within government if you're in government. You need somebody who says, that woman, that man has what it takes, and I'm going to mentor them, teach them what to do. And I had one or two mentors, one or two in the government and one particular in a law firm, which said, here's how you deal with clients, here's how you work on the matters, here's how you expand business, here's how you expand business. And so it's important to have mentors, but now as a more senior partner, I try to identify associates who have talent and show these various skill sets, and I try to mentor them, because fundamentally, you have an obligation to your firm and to the legal community to develop the talent of the next generation. And part of that's selfish. You know, the law firm, once you retire, you get some sort of benefits from them. You want them around. You want always an office to go to as a senior counsel or whatever. But more importantly, it's your obligation to the organization and to the legal community. Our society fundamentally works because we have lawyers out there that says, between a government that's going off track and the individual, there's a gladiator who's going to fight your battles. And that's got to be true today, and it's got to be true for the future. That's why Western democracy works.
Awesome. You were speaking about mentors just now. Now, how would you advise an associate, someone just graduating law school, how would you advise them to find a mentor, to seek a mentor? Like, what's the best way to go about finding one?
Well, I think early in your career, you have to try to identify the people who are potential mentors. And in a mentor, you need to look for two things: a willingness to teach you, a willingness to give you work, but also someone who has some influence within the law firm. Becoming the favorite associate of a partner who essentially relies on others to get work and doesn't have his own business is very nice, but that's not going to get you partnership. So your choice of your mentor is also important in that sense. Find someone who's invested themselves in the law firm, who are well-liked in the law firm, who have a decent independent practice in the law firm, because you need more than advice. You need someone who will be an effective advocate for you over the years by influencing his other partners or her other partners.
Awesome. Now, Seth, how would you describe your leadership and management style? And have you had any feedback from those who you manage about your leadership and management style?
So the critical path to being a good manager is to convince the people who work for you, younger partners, associates, that you're interested in their well-being, that you're interested in their being successful and their in pursuing their careers. So with my partners, I'll give them advice. Here's the way you go get business. Here's the partners within the law firm who will be more helpful to you. If you have this kind of problem, you can go to Fred or Lois. I think Lois will do a better job for you and or won't try to take all the credit away from you. So, I mean, that's just common sense, right? But the fact that a senior partner is willing to talk to his partners and guide them through the politics of the law firm, you get enormous credibility with those people. They're both loyal to you to do your work well, and you become a personal friend of theirs. And the same is true with associates. Those that you think have what it takes to be a partner, you guide them, you mentor them, you help them get assignments. The key, as always, is to generate in the people you deal with this sense that you have their back, that their interests are important to you, your partners, your associates, your clients, your children. You need to let people know that you care about them and you're going to help them. And as a management style, it generates a lot more loyalty than simply, I did you a favor, you ought to be loyal to me.
Right. Now, when it comes to hiring, what do you look for in the people that you hire?
So I used to look for merely someone who's academically superior, writes well, and as a scholar, had what it took to be a lawyer, because fundamentally, it's an intellectual business.
Right.
I now look for somebody with the soft skills of a good personality, talks back to me, contests what I say to them, can develop a relationship with me. And that's true universally. What was once all about purely intellectual achievement is now intellectual achievement and personality. Because the second piece tells you whether or not they'll be successful in a private business enterprise called the law firm, where it's all about keeping clients happy and getting them to pay you for good work.
Awesome. Now, how do you typically interview and hire?
So the law firm always gets a fair number of summer associates through a large, large interview process. But the truth is the summer associate process has broken down. There's so much competition in New York, Chicago, California, the major cities, Los Angeles, that you give out 90 offers and you're lucky to get 10 summer associates.
Wow.
It's that crazy. And so you need to combine the hiring of fresh people with a careful hiring of laterals, because it's expensive to develop a fresh skill set. With a graduate, you always need a certain number of people coming into the system from the ground floor. But I now hire a large number of laterals as well as first years, because then you get people that someone else has paid to train. Now, you always have to be careful that they're not being thrown out by their other law firm, or they're coming out of the government and they had a good career in government. But the reality is today, throughout the legal community, it's a combination of new lawyers and laterals that build the associate class.
Right. Now, what would you say is your ratio of laterals to brand new lawyers?
New associates?
Yeah.
2-1. For every 2 first years, we'll hire a lateral. And it used to be that you hired almost no laterals. Now it's a third of your associate class.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what advice would you have then for new law school grads, as well as those that are looking to transfer laterally?
So the two things you need to think about is, one, what do I want to do with my life? If I'm interested in being in the law firm environment, I need to understand I need excellent legal skills and an interest in developing business and sales. I'm just telling you the way it is. You got to be in sales as well as in business. Mm-hmm. And even as a lateral, a decision coming out of a law firm, do I want to go in-house, which has sometimes, not always, better hours? You know, there's also this unique situation the last few years where the in-house lawyers are working harder because the law firm prices are going up, so they want the in-house lawyers to do more. So it may actually not be a reduction in your number of hours.
Right.
But certainly you're no longer in sales. Now you're just in performing good legal services and getting along with your office mates. But my advice to them is, first, decide what you want to do. And if you decide to go into the law firm world, put together a business development plan from day one. I'm going to be a great lawyer, but I'm also going to develop my business relationships because I want to be successful in a law firm. If you're going in-house, you want to be able to develop your office skills, having relationships with your office mates, as well as being a lawyer. It is more and more today a matter of personality as well as skill.
Definitely. So Seth, we're about to wrap up soon. What is your industry outlook for the next 2 to 5 years, say?
It is clear to me that with Congress divided, a somewhat controversial president, but a great business environment, that we're going to have a fair amount of change. We're going to have new legislation. And with the economy strong, I've got to say the legal outlook looks strong. The associate salaries are going up this year with the new cravat change. Everybody's jumping on. So that tells me that there's confidence in the next few years. And people may say, oh, well, maybe the Democrats will come in next time and that'll change things. Change is good,
right,
as I began. So my answer is, I think the decision to be a lawyer, the decision to go into private practice, if you have the mentality for it, it's one of the great gifts of careers. I mean, I've been around the world. I've been in courts throughout the country. I've talked to senators and prime ministers and very interesting people. And that's all through the gift of a law degree and a desire to meet and help people. And there may be better careers out there, but I don't know many.
Well, Seth, that's about all the questions we have for you today. So thank you very much for joining us. And I think you really gave us some great advice, and it was great to have you on.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed very much speaking with you, Colin.
Awesome. Now, before we go, is there any speaking engagements or anything that you would like to let people know about? Any publications that you might be in that you want to let people know about?
Well, I've just finished a bunch of speaking engagements. It's a little slower in the summer, but I have been talking to Bloomberg News quite a bit, so I think you could look for some of my comments there, as well as in the Wall Street Journal. But I will let you know once we line up the fall engagements.
Definitely. All right, Seth, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Same here. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed recording it. Now, whether you're an attorney looking for the next step in their career or a law firm looking to hire the top 15% in your niche, visit us at bcresourcegroup.com to see how we can help.
Thanks for listening to the Path to Partner podcast. For more exclusive content, log on to bcresourcegroup.com or subscribe to the show on iTunes.